I'm now turning to the second file into which this lecture has been divided. In the second part of the lecture, we will present data from around the world for a number of demographic factors to illustrate ways in which populations are dynamic, they change over time, and diverse, they are different from one another, and also heterogeneous, they are composed of disparate subpopulations. Among the key health-related characteristics of populations are their size and density, age distribution, sex ratio, geographical distribution, ethnic composition, level and distribution of education, level and distribution of economic resources. Key health-related demographic events and processes include birth, marriage, migration, aging, and death. Most of the data that I will present in the rest of this lecture come from publications of the Population Reference Bureau. This organization is a terrific source for demographic and related data and analysis, and publishes very informative and readable reports. You can find the Population Reference Bureau at its website, www.prb.org, and I encourage you to join this organization. The following graphs and tables come from four issues of the Population Bulletin: Population, A Lively Introduction, from October 1991, Asian Americans, Diverse and Growing, from June 1998, Elderly Americans, from December 2001, and India's Population in Transition, from October 1995. First, we'll take a look at data on mortality, life expectancy, health status, and fertility. Mortality is a key indicator of population health, and age is a key determinant of mortality. This graph shows U.S. death rates by age and gender in 1990. Death rates in the U.S. decline from a relatively low level in infancy, remain very low during childhood, adolescence, and the young adult years, begin to rise in the mid-20s, continue rising during the 30s and 40s, continue to accelerate during the 50s and 60s, and turn sharply up thereafter. I'm about 58, by the way. The mortality rate for females is lower than that for men, and rises more slowly than that for men at every age. Thus, any comparison of mortality rates across populations or groups within a population must in some way account for the age and gender distributions of the groups being compared. On the next slide, the table shows life expectancy at birth and at age 65 by sex in three different years, 1900, 1950, and 2000. Life expectancy is essentially a summarization of the mortality rates at each age, such as those presented in the preceding slide that showed mortality for each age. To estimate life expectancy in a given year, such as in this slide, 1900, we take a hypothetical cohort of people and imagine that they pass through life from birth to death, being subjected to the mortality rates of 1900 in this example. So if we begin with 100,000 babies, estimate how many would still be alive by their first birthday, then estimate how many of these would still be alive by their second birthday, and so on until the cohort had all died, we can add up the number of years of life left to live in the cohort and divide by 100,000. The result is life expectancy. So, for example, life expectancy at birth is the sum of the number of years of life lived by all persons in the cohort and divided by 100,000 in this case. So the female life expectancy at birth in 1900, 48.3 years as given in the table, is obtained as the average number of years that each member of a cohort of females would have lived if they experienced the mortality rates recorded in 1900 for each age group. The life expectancy at age 65 is estimated by taking the number of years lived at or after age 65 and dividing by the number of people who reached age 65. So, in the table, for example, in 2000, the life expectancy for females at age 65 was 19.2, which means that if we apply the death rates of 2000 for all ages after age 65 to an imaginary cohort of women at age 65 and follow them until they all die, then we can add up those number of years that they lived and divide by the number of females in our imaginary cohort, and we would have the life expectancy at age 65 for females in 2000. Notice that life expectancy is not a projection nor a prediction. For the life expectancy in 1900, we used the mortality rates for each age as they were in 1900. But mortality rates have been declining over time, and by the time that someone born in 1900 was age 50, she or he would experience the mortality rate in 1950 rather than the mortality rate from 1900. So life expectancy is a way of summarizing the mortality rates across all ages at a specific time rather than a prediction. The life expectancies shown in the table, which come from the National Center for Health Statistics, show that life expectancy increased substantially during the 20th century, more so for females than for males. Life expectancy at birth was 46.3 and 48.3 years, respectively, for males and females in 1900. By 2000, these figures had become 74.1 and 79.5 years, an increase of about 30 years. The male-female gap in life expectancy, which was 2 years in 1900, had grown to over 5 years by 2000. Life expectancy is most heavily influenced by mortality rates at young ages. Improvements in nutrition, hygiene and conditions of living, such as housing and child labor, immunizations and reductions in maternal mortality, reduced mortality among infants, children, and women in their reproductive years. These reductions were responsible for much of the increase in life expectancy from birth during the first half of the 20th century. Reductions in childhood mortality, of course, have no effect on life expectancy at age 65. Even the elimination of a cause of death, such as heart disease, can increase life expectancy only modestly, since mortality rates from other causes are so high. Nevertheless, during the 20th century, life expectancy at age 65 increased by about 4 years for males and 7 years for females, a substantial gain. A thought question for you. Life expectancy at birth in 2000 was 76.9 years for men and women together. Why is this so much less than 65 plus the 17.9 years of life expectancy at age 65? I'll let you think about that. The next graph, Chronic Health Conditions Among Americans Age 70 or Older by Race and Selected Age Group, 1995. Shows the prevalence, that is, the percentage of the population who are afflicted, for six chronic conditions: arthritis, hypertension, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, and stroke, for two age groups, 70 to 74 and 85 or more years, in 1995. Races on another part of the chart that I didn't scan here. Most of these conditions are more prevalent in the older age group. But what is perhaps most significant in the graph is the substantial prevalences of older Americans who have arthritis, over half, hypertension, nearly half, heart disease or a history of cancer, about 1 in 5 for each, diabetes and history of stroke, about 1 in 10 for each. Since the population of elderly is expanding rapidly, it is likely that we will see much larger numbers, though not necessarily larger percentages, of older people with chronic health conditions. We cannot automatically conclude that when today's 50 to 75-year-olds are 70 to 95, we cannot automatically conclude that they will experience chronic health conditions at these same percentages, since people who in 1995 were older than age 70 years, the ones being referred to in the graph, were born before 1925 and therefore had different life experiences and exposures than people who will pass age 70 during the next two decades, such as myself. But it is likely that the prevalence of these conditions will be at least as great, since prevention of arthritis and hypertension is not on the horizon, whereas survival from heart disease and cancer will probably increase. The obesity epidemic will probably continue to contribute to higher rates of diabetes and probably heart disease and cancer. If survival improves, the prevalence of these conditions will increase and quite likely become a burden for the healthcare system and possibly the financial ability of the younger generations. The graph on this next slide shows U.S. birth rates by the mother's age during the period 1955 to 1988. Again, the data come from the CDC, National Center for Health Statistics. Each line on the graph shows the birth rate per 1,000 women for women of different age groups. Birth rates to women in all age in all ages, have come down substantially during the period. Most of the reduction occurred between 1960 and 1975, at which time rates increased for the older age groups. The peak childbearing years are age 20 to 24, the top line, and 25 to 29 years, the second line. These have sharply decreased and converged. Women in their early 20s are delaying giving birth. The trend toward older mothers is also reflected in the increase after 1975 in the birth rates for women aged 30 to 34, the third highest in 1955, and age 35 to 39 years, the next to the lowest line. The rate of births to teenagers age 15 to 19 years old, the fourth highest line, an important public health indicator, has declined somewhat during the period, and in fact continued to decline after the time that this graph ends. Some of that decline, especially before 1975, may reflect delayed marriage and family formation. Here's a slide of a birth rate calculation. We've been referring to birth rates, mortality rates, and so forth without defining them. Let's make sure that we all understand these important demographic measures. The birth rate for a given year is calculated as the number of births in that year divided by an estimate of the total population at mid-year. The reason for using the mid-year population is that if the population is steadily increasing, as is commonly the case, the mid-year population provides a close approximation to the average number of people in the population on any given day of the year. The use of the mid-year population as kind of a compromise between the starting and ending populations is a common practice for vital statistics rates. Note that the denominator for the birth rate consists of both men and women of all ages, even though many of these people can neither bear children nor father them. In order to reduce the number of decimal places, the birth rate and some other vital statistics rates are customarily expressed per 1,000 people. This slide shows a fertility rate calculation. The fertility rate is related to the birth rate. The fertility rate expresses the number of births in a year relative to the number of women of reproductive age. Note the difference in the denominator. Again, the estimated mid-year population is used, and the result is usually expressed per 1,000 women of reproductive age. The fertility rate requires more information about the population and gives a more specific indication of reproductive behavior and the components of population growth. Now, a death rate calculation on the next slide. You've probably already guessed that an annual death rate or mortality rate, annual mortality rate, is estimated as the number of deaths divided by the mid-year population and is often expressed per 1,000 people. As with the birth rate, the denominator for the death rate is the total population, men, women, and all ages, even though mortality rates vary greatly by age and gender. For this reason, the overall death rate is not used very often. More typically, death rates are calculated for specific subgroups defined by gender and age. When an overall figure is desired, the rates for the different age groups are combined as a weighted average. The resulting average is called an age-adjusted or age-standardized mortality rate and is typically computed separately for males and females. As we have seen in earlier slides, death rates may be estimated for specific causes of death, such as all cancers, specific cancer sites, heart disease, and so on. A major concern in interpreting all vital statistics and epidemiologic rates is the quality of the data that were available to calculate them. In developed countries, birth records, death records, and population size estimates are generally available and accurate, reasonably. Information on cause of death, however, is much less reliable since there are various definitional and practical obstacles in accurately classifying deaths as to cause. Thus, before relying on data on cause-specific mortality, it is important to assess the likely accuracy for each specific cause of death being analyzed. More problematic is the situation in less developed countries where population counts and vital events registration may be incomplete to varying degrees. Let's look at an average annual death rate calculation on the next slide. When a rate is estimated from a small number of events, the resulting estimate is unstable. If even a few events were miscounted, or if there was a minor variation that particular year, the rate could be misleading, compared to what it generally was. Estimates based on small numbers are called imprecise or unreliable and generally avoided. A common strategy, therefore, is to estimate an average over several years as a way of obtaining a larger number of events for the calculation. The slide above illustrates the calculation of an average annual death rate. Here, the average number of deaths during the n-year period is used as the numerator. The denominator estimates the average size of the population during that period, as usual by taking the size of the population at the midpoint. So, for calculating the 3-year average annual death rate for 1991 to 2001, the numerator would contain all deaths during 1999, 2000, and 2001, divided by 3, because there were 3 years. And the denominator would be the population estimate for July 1, 2000, which is the midpoint of the 3-year period 1999 to 2001. Since the year in which the United States Census count takes place has the most nearly accurate population size estimate for the United States, the period used for average annual death rates or birth rates in the United States is usually chosen so that the census year is in the middle.